Are you struggling to decide what breast surgery to choose? Do you want to know if it's worth having both breasts removed? And how do you work out whether to have a breast reconstruction? There are so many things to consider when it comes to breast surgery, and today I'm going to answer all your questions with this week's guest, Dr. Anushka Chaudhary. She's a consultant oncoplastic breast surgeon, and like me, she's committed to making sure her patients get the best possible care. Welcome back to Season 2 of So Now I've Got Breast Cancer, the podcast for anyone who's just been diagnosed. I'm Dr. Liz O'Riordan, the breast surgeon with breast cancer, and I found out the hard way just how little I knew when I suddenly found myself in the chemo chair. It's why I wrote my book, The Complete Guide to Breast Cancer. There's a lot of bad information out there, and I want to guide you down the right path. So if you've got a question, this show will answer it for you. Now, I used to think that deciding what breast surgery to have was fairly simple. As a breast surgeon, I would look at all your results, examine your breasts, and tell you what I thought would give you the best result. But judging by the huge number of questions I've had for today's episode, things like margins, is one operation better than another? Should you have both breasts removed? I knew I had to do a whole episode on breast surgery. And helping me today is the wonderful Dr. Anushka Chaudhary. She's an oncoplastic breast surgeon and she dedicates her spare time to helping her patients. She set up the Aurora Breast Cancer Wellbeing Charity and, like me, posts videos on Instagram to explain breast cancer treatment. And we're really lucky to have her as a guest. Welcome to the show, Anushka.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited. And thanks all for your amazing questions.
Oh, it's going to be great to get through them. But before Absolutely. We start, can you just explain what an oncoplastic breast surgeon is?
Absolutely. So this term was coined about 15 years ago or so. And historically, breast surgery used to be done by general surgeons who did all other types of operations. And reconstructive surgery used to be done by plastic surgeons. So oncoplastic is a marriage of both of those skills. The priority every time is removing the cancer. No one should think anything else. But we also know that with better treatments now, women are doing better than ever before. And the aesthetics of the breast really matter. So oncoplastics puts those together, remove the cancer, and how can we get the best aesthetic outcome for you for the future?
And it was a real game changer to my practice. I'm sure when you first started, it was basically like smash and grab. You just cut down and removed it. And I've had women flash me in Sainsbury's to say, you can't see my scar. It's just lovely being able to do that
Absolutely.
For them, isn't it?
Absolutely. It really is. Yeah.
But I wanted to ask a bit about the charity that you set up, because being a surgeon is blooming busy, but you've set this up to help local patients in your area. What is that all about?
Yeah, so it came actually from a coincidence. I know this sounds really weird. I held a bit of a health scare when I was a few years into being a consultant, and it wasn't a breast cancer scare, but it was a cancer scare. And at that time in my life, my kids were a bit younger. I was in the prime of my career as a new consultant. And I thought, you know, if I have to stop work tomorrow and go through chemotherapy, cancer treatment, what would I need? What's around me? And where I was living at the time, and actually we'll see this across the country, there was nothing. There was no support. So when I finally got my results back, and fortunately I didn't have to have any treatment. In fact, it was okay. It was benign. It was self-limiting. It went away. I was a different person. I'd been on the other side and it changed everything for me. And I wanted to kind of do something for people where I knew there was a huge gap at that time. So what we do now is we've created a sisterhood, a support group of women who just get it. Aurora supports women from 50 and under, essentially premenopausal women, because their issues will be very different to women who haven't yet gone through the menopause. For example, fertility issues, sexual well-being, relationships, bone health, so many other aspects, financial issues as well, again, being maybe in the prime of their career. And we do well-being retreats for them. And we also provide urgent psychological counselling sessions, because the waiting list, unfortunately, is about 4 to 6 months on the NHS. So there are some people who need it sooner than others. So we hope to just encompass everything in a big hug and try and support people as they're going through their journey and afterwards as well.
It's just incredible and so needed. But I wanted to talk about the South Asian supernovas as well. Yeah. So we had Leanne Perro on last season talking about the inequalities in breast cancer care. Can you tell us a bit more about the South Asian supernovas?
Yeah, absolutely. So part of one of my other passions is about, you know, looking at the inequalities of Black ethnic minority groups, being a South Asian myself, I wanted to look at that as well. And I had been invited to a few kind of do's where Leanne had been at as well. Amazing work she's doing, I think, so important with such little representation. And there's a South Asian representative who works with that group called Krina Diman. And along with Toril Shah, another inspiration who has been through breast cancer treatment at a very young age, they set up South Asian Supernovas and use healthcare professionals, social media influencers, you know, Asians who are doing pockets of work everywhere. But why do them in pockets when you can be very powerful as a whole? And that's where the supernova was born, really. So there are projects coming. We want to try and work alongside groups like Leanne's Black Women Rising and actually try and create similar groups and support and education for the South Asian community as well. So we can do better for them because we know that less South Asian women are going to take up not only breast cancer surgery, but also reconstruction. They're less likely to go into trials. So we can just be doing better overall for that group.
And it's just great to know that you can find your tribe wherever you are, whoever you are.
That's it.
But let's start with a question. So a lot of people asked, what are the different types of surgery that someone with breast cancer might be offered?
Okay. So without getting too complex, I think there are various factors first that we would need to look at. It's not only about the size of the cancer, but also the size of the breast that cancer is in. And we have to look at the type of cancer. And I think what people need to understand is a grade one or a grade two or a grade three in one person is biologically very different to that in another person. So what you see on paper, you can easily try and make a comparison, but it's very individual. And essentially, we look at either, can we keep a breast called breast conservation, or do we have to recommend removing the whole breast, a mastectomy? Now, if we look at breast conservation on its own, if we need to remove more than 20% of the breast tissue, we have to think, is that breast going to look like it used to when I started, or do I need to move things around? So we do what's called volume displacement. And that might mean reshaping your breast. It might mean we should offer you a procedure on the other side to match you up to what we've done to you. So there's volume displacement, or there is doing a mastectomy, which can be with or without reconstruction.
Brilliant. And I think that 20% doesn't mean that your breast cancer is 20%, a fifth the size of your breast. It's the breast cancer plus the tissue we take to get clear margins as well, isn't it?
That's it. Absolutely. And, you know, these are really difficult things to think about, decisions to make at a really vulnerable time of someone's life. And I think, you know, that hierarchy of, oh, my doctor's going to tell me what to do, thank goodness, has long gone. People are so empowered with information, and hopefully, you know, podcasts like this will help them to really make that a peer-to-peer level conversation. And it's not just what the surgeon thinks is right for you. We've got to take into account not only the cancer diagnosis, but where are you in your life? What's your priorities? Do you exercise lots? You know, what is your school pickup routine if you have one? And you know, what are your wishes for the future? As well as, what are your feelings about your own breasts? You know, not pushing a reconstruction on someone who doesn't have a good relationship with their breasts, who doesn't really care if they have a mastectomy and doesn't want a reconstruction. We should respect that decision as well. So part of that initial consultation is really getting to know that person in a very, very short space of time, listening as much as possible and thinking on the spot for them. There is no point offering somebody every single operation under the sun because we think we should. We've got to guide someone and give them time to think. The other thing is not trying to make a decision there and then, and being empowered to say, I need to take this away. I need to read. I need to sleep on it. And I'll give you a ring in a few days or maybe in a week. Because unless you're telling me I need this operation now, I need to make the right decision now for the future.
And most breast cancers aren't medical emergencies. Inflammatory breast cancer is a bit different, but it can take 10 years for a cancer to form a lump. So you do have time
Absolutely.
To think.
Absolutely.
And it also might be worth talking about, sometimes you can't get what you want, the quality of your skin or whether your breasts are soft or firm. And that can be quite upsetting as well when you can't have what you want.
Very much so. I mean, there was a paper published in the last couple of years. Let's just talk about breast conservation alone to show that if one can conserve a breast, if you can, for the tumour size and the patient factors, then we should try as much as possible to do so, because we know that breast conservation has long-term impacts on quality of life, depression scores, and therefore survival. So we try, again, if it's the patient's wishes. But it isn't, as you say, always possible. We have to take into account, you know, unfortunately, weight does play a factor, as well as smoking. Skin quality, you mentioned. having had previous radiotherapy can have an impact on what we can offer you. It's not about trying to say no to someone. It's trying to say, if I do this for you, I wouldn't be doing the right thing because I know it might have high complication rates, or you're not going to be as satisfied as I think you might want to be. So how do I support you as best as possible, physically, psychologically? And are there any options we can maybe think about in the future so that you know there is a possibility down the line?
It's really complex, isn't it? And
yeah.
Sadly, not every surgeon I know thinks the same as you and I,
yeah.
But I'm hoping the message is getting out there. Now, one question a couple of people asked, and I know there was a paper recently, if you've got a small cancer and you can have a lumpectomy, is having a mastectomy better to reduce the risk of recurrence?
Yeah, it's of course a really important question. A lot of women think they need their breast removed to survive, but there is no known difference in survival if you have a lumpectomy compared to a mastectomy. However, if you have a lumpectomy, we often have to treat the rest of the breast with radiotherapy to significantly reduce the risk of a cancer coming back. And then people will say, well, if a cancer comes back, I'm going to die. Well, no, that is also not the case. And we can say that with much more certainty now than we used to, with new evidence that a local recurrence in the breast does not have an effect on your long-term survival because we can treat it.
And that's great to know as someone who's had two of them. So
Yeah, absolutely. And whilst I'm not saying it's not devastating, and the thought that women have of going, I just cannot go through chemo again. If you told me that was going to be on the cards if this cancer came back, it ruined me the first time. I can't face it the second time. These are the kind of discussions we have to have. And whilst if someone had a very small cancer that is treatable with a lumpectomy, we also have to consider their perceptions, their experiences. Their mum or sister or friend might have had breast cancer. And so all of these fears and thoughts are going to have an effect on the decision making, which again is why time and having a breather is really important.
That's so helpful, Anushka. Thank you. But now I want to talk about margins. Ruthie, Dutchie in Australia and Denise want to know all about lumpectomy and margins. What are they and why are they important?
Okay. Really great question. So when we talk about margins, we want a clearance of normal tissue around the cancer. Because if we just shelled out a cancer, popped it out like a pea in a pod, we know the risk of a cancer coming back in that breast is really high. So loads of work has been done over many, many decades to say, how much clearance do we need? And actually, under the microscope, we don't need much at all. There is a bit of a debate across the world, so the American guidelines are different to the British guidelines. But as a basis, we are moving towards, if a tumour is at the edge, and there's either we paint the edge of the margins when we take a specimen out, so the pathologist knows which edge is which. So if there's tumour on ink, that can be acceptable for an invasive cancer, but we like a millimetre clearance for DCIS, the pre-invasive cancer. So with a margin, when you take a cancer out, people often ask me, what does it look like? You know, if you see more, can you take more at the time of the operation? That's the whole point of planning and really having our multidisciplinary team meeting is we use the imaging to say, what are we expecting? And we absolutely try and stay away from a cancer in an operation. We want to know where it is so we can go around it. So we don't cut into a cancer. But we do then x-ray what we've removed whilst you're still asleep on the table to say, with my eyes, can I see, does this look clear? If I'm not sure, I'll take more. In the UK, there is a huge variation of the re-excision rate or the number of people who have to go back for a second operation. And it can be up to 20%, which is quite a high number.
So that's one in five women, isn't it?
One in five women. And units across the country are all participating in national studies to try and say, how can we bring that need for a woman to have a second devastating operation? Because we know that if 20% approximately of women need a re-excision, about 40% of them will choose to have a mastectomy after one operation, which is hard because then 60% of them might want a reconstruction. So there's huge implications for the number of operations someone might have. If we can prevent that happening, how good would that be?
Yeah. And we're getting there. I think a millimetre sounds like a tiny, tiny margin, but you have to remember how big a cell is. So that's like almost millions of cells in that 1 millimetre of tissue. So it's actually
Absolutely.
Much bigger than you think.
Yeah, very much so.
You may hear that your margins are positive, and anterior and posterior margins, and how they're different to the margins around the side of the tissue.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, again, really important. So I mentioned when we remove a lump, we mark the specimen, we paint every edge of it, including the top, the one close to the surface and the one underneath the lump as well. When one does a lumpectomy, in all of us, we have a fat layer under our skin, all of us, no matter how skinny you are. And when you do a breast operation, there is a specific plane or space between the fat under our skin and the breast tissue, and we define that area. So removing the tissue, we know that if we've got a close anterior margin, then it's close to the fat under the skin, but there is no more breast tissue to take. And we can say that with certainty. If, however, on the imaging, or you're looking and you can see some puckering and we know the tumor is close to the skin, then, hey, we have to make a cut above that lump and take skin sometimes. So we do everything to reduce that. And then on top of that, radiotherapy may come into it as well. If we can say, well, I haven't got more tissue to take anteriorly, there's definitely nothing behind because I went down to the chest wall, but maybe she should have some extra radiotherapy so we can give better certainty for the future.
Brilliant. I hope that helps explain everybody. It's quite hard to get your head around. But this is a different topic. I had quite a few questions, and there are lots of online influencers spreading what I think is rubbish, saying that biopsies spread cancer, surgery spreads cancer, you drop tiny cells that can go away and implant somewhere. Is there any truth in that?
We have no evidence of that. Again, this has been studied for decades, and it's a question that comes up, and it's actually something I hope people are heartened by the fact that we discuss this at our international and national meetings as well. We worry about tumour seeding, we call it, along the biopsy site and with surgery, and there is no evidence that that is the case at all. So please know that. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing the biopsies or the procedures we do.
There's no truth in it.
No.
Now, Jay's 2029 wanted to ask, can I have a mastectomy instead of a wide local excision or lumpectomy if I want to avoid radiotherapy?
There is that possibility, yes, absolutely. So radiotherapy decisions are made based on certain criteria. Criteria are annoying in a way, aren't they? Because they sound like very fixed markers, but they are helpful because over years we've studied where are people going to benefit and where are they not. Don't forget, radiotherapy doesn't come without its own risks, you know, and side effects. So we want to give it where necessary. So matching that up with the potential of improving quality of life down the line by saving a breast, we've got to put all of these factors together. So if a tumour is a certain size, or if it is not in various parts of the breast, there are other features like what we call lymphovascular invasion. So can we see under the microscope it started to go into the blood vessels and nerves around the tissue? What is the age of the person having the treatment? Are there many lymph nodes involved? Multiple things. Then there is a chance by having your whole breast removed, you could avoid radiotherapy. We can't 100% guarantee that. So to have a whole breast removed to avoid radiotherapy, if you're borderline, can be disappointing because we might still say you need radiotherapy after a mastectomy if we find more factors than we were expecting.
Yeah. But on the whole, especially if you have trouble traveling to radiotherapy, you want to avoid it, it may be an option that you can discuss with your surgeon.
Oh, okay, absolutely.
Asma sent us this voice note, so we're going to hear what she has to say.
If you have triple negative, what is the best option, lumpectomy or mastectomy, in terms of having less chance of reoccurrence? Thank you.
Thank you for that. Really important question. Again, when we hear the words triple negative or HER2 positive, people automatically think that they need more aggressive cancer as surgery as well as cancer treatment. In reality, the risks are very similar. So there is no need to remove your breast if it can be treated with a lumpectomy. It will be treated the same way as we treat other invasive cancers. Unfortunately, the reality when it comes to triple negative cancers is we don't worry so much about a cancer coming back in the breast itself, but more about other sites. And that's where the chemotherapy treatment comes into it. So there is no specific advantage over having a mastectomy with a lumpectomy with triple negative.
Brilliant. So regardless of what cancer you have, as long as it's been completely removed with clear margins, it won't affect your risk of recurrence because they've all been treated the same.
That's right.
Now, this is quite a controversial topic that I had a lot of patients ask me about, and I've thought about it myself. Should you have both breasts removed to treat a cancer?
And this discussion is coming up more than ever before, even though we've had it for years. So the answer is no. At the same time, it's very difficult to hear the words no when your fears are hugely heightened. So if we look at it in a really basic way, the risk of getting a cancer on the opposite breast, if you have an invasive cancer, is very small. It's about 3.4% per year.
Yeah.
If you have a lobular cancer, that can be a little bit higher at about 4%. And if you have DCIS, it's really low. It's about 0.6% per year. So that is on the other side. Cancers don't tend to spread from one breast to the other breast. You might develop a new cancer, but remember, we are doing surveillance on that side.
Yeah.
So we're keeping an eye on the other breast. And in reality, now I feel a lot more women are asking for the other breast to be removed because they are so worried about it. But I often try and say we need to think about these things and take time. And we call it a cooling off period. I hate putting terminology on things, but I liken it to if something terrible happens, like an earthquake or, sorry to say this, but something terrible happens, like a terror attack on a tube. We avoid the tube for about 3 weeks and then life goes back to normal. And studies have shown, as well as personal experience, that your anxiety is heightened at the time of diagnosis. And that can ease off and go down significantly if we give it more time.
Yeah.
So it's important to think about that cooling off period and not rush into decisions, because we know that removing a normal breast does not impact your survival.
So that's really helpful. So we know removing the other breast doesn't change your breast cancer outcome. But we had this audio from Amy in Devon, and there are other reasons why women might want their breasts removed, either for symmetry or for anxiety. And she asked us this.
Hi, Liz and Anushka. I have a question relating to the shoulder flap reconstruction. I've been offered that as a reconstruction option at the same time as my mastectomy. I've got small, wide breasts, and the surgeon feels that would be a good match. Implants would make me larger, and the shoulder implant is less invasive than having the stomach used. But I am left-handed and it's on my dominant side. Would this be a terrible idea? I can't find anyone who's had this operation to know more about it. Thank you.
Yeah, this is one of the most complex discussions to have, isn't it? It is the hardest, because you want to maintain that relationship and rapport with your patient and let them know that you've got their back and will do anything to get them through this. And at the same time, you can't chop off a normal part of the body just because it's worrying you. We know that, as we just said, that removing a normal breast doesn't impact survival, and that you might change your mind. And studies have shown that women, a significant number of women, can, you know, huge regret by having a normal breast removed. If you have a reconstruction on that normal breast, what if that goes wrong and you didn't need that operation in the first place? And remember, you might develop a cancer in that side, but it hadn't come from this first side that you got it. So we can't prove that your survival is going to improve. This is a really important skill, and I really hope that many surgeons around the country start having these conversations with their breast nurse specialists within their teams. How do we navigate somebody through this? So if everybody wanted their normal breast removed, I'm sorry to say, but the NHS would fall apart because we'd be spending all our time operating, taking off breasts that don't have cancer. But what about the patient's mind and their quality of life and what they're thinking? So this is a really important team discussion. I have to advocate for my patient, as well as the breast nurse specialist. We have to advocate for you in our meetings and taking factors into account. Okay, genetic mutations, family history, wishes for the future, breast size.
It's different, isn't it? Yeah.
So many things. Can I say that I really want to do this for you at this time? Or can I recommend to you that we really have some counselling, give it time, get through this treatment, and let's have that discussion again? Because if every day of your life is crippled by anxiety, then that's not good. And we've got to do something to help you.
As someone who's flat on one side, I think a lot of women who've had one mastectomy would rather be bilaterally flat for symmetry. And I know the NHS doesn't get funding to do that operation because it doesn't have any impact on my cancer outcome. But actually, I think women are meant to be symmetrical. And I think we should be able to say, if you just want to go bilaterally flat to make it easier for you psychologically, it's something we should maybe consider in the future.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. I really do. And I said, that's why I feel like we should advocate for you and really get to know you on that basis. And sometimes it's not about also, sorry, just to briefly say, removing the other breast completely. Another option if we're able to sometimes have this discussion, is if you're very big on one side and the thought of that prosthesis is too much, is to have that side reduced to make it easier to wear a smaller prosthesis. So options in between.
It's a great option. But ideally a cooling off period so you get over the shock of the cancer diagnosis. Now I want to change track and move on to an audio question from Maureen.
Hi Liz, I'm 38. I was just recently diagnosed metastatic de novo. And I'm just wondering why primary tumours aren't removed when somebody is diagnosed metastatic. I had surgery set up and it was cancelled the day before, and I'm just wondering why it's not a priority. In my head, having less cancer in your body is better. But I'm just wondering what the ethos behind that is.
It's a tough one, isn't it?
It's a tough one. And there have been lots of studies on this. So these are difficult conversations to have, aren't they? So someone is faced with disease that has left the breast and gone elsewhere, and we aim to treat that and stabilize it, but we can't say we can ever completely get rid of it. So you're likely to be on long-term treatment. And some phrases that people use, which I don't know if I agree with or can understand the ethos behind it, is that the horse has bolted. Why now take the breast cancer out when it's not going to change the fact that it's already gone somewhere else? There is some thinking that by removing what we call the tumour burden, so if you've got a tumour, why can't we take it out? Because then if we're giving you chemo treatment or immunotherapy, there's less work for it to do because there's less disease. Despite that thinking and despite these conversations happening every week, with long-term research, there isn't any evidence it makes a difference. They've really tried hard to find groups of patients where it can, such as HER2-positive or triple-negative people of a young age, and they may have found a very small benefit, but nothing significant to change practice. In saying that, just this month, I have done a mastectomy on a lady who had a node that was by her windpipe, that was found at the time of diagnosis. And she was desperate to have that breast removed. And she was presenting multiple times to the clinic with pain and symptoms in that breast. And actually, when we did imaging, it looked like it was a bit static. And I just think, again, it was about advocating for her and doing that operation. A concern some surgeons have is by putting someone through big surgery, are we lessening the immune system by doing a big operation, which could give cancer cells the chance to spread despite being on treatment? Can't prove it, but these are the kind of things that we have to think about.
And I think there may be no clinical benefit to doing it, but the psychological benefit of living with a tumour in the breast that you can see, that you can feel, knowing it's gone, even though it will make a difference, may be a reason to do it. But there are different practices over the UK, depending on how you feel. But let's move on to reconstruction now. We're not going to go into the technical side of it, because that would be like hours and hours and hours. But let's talk about what are the pros and cons of having it at the time of your mastectomy or waiting until after?
So if it's an option for you, we know that if you have a reconstruction at the time of a mastectomy, depending on the shape and size of your breast, we can preserve all, if not most, of the skin. And if you think about a natural breast shape, a natural breast droop, you can achieve a better reconstruction aesthetic result if you do a reconstruction at the time of a mastectomy. If you consider someone who's completely flat and then wants to have a mastectomy, there are some limitations with how much of a natural breast shape you can get, because you have to start from scratch. You're starting from flat. And it can mean more operations to, first of all, stretch up the skin, and then secondly, replace it with the volume of something else, for example, an implant or your own tissue.
Yeah.
And then do we need to think about bringing in skin from somewhere else, for example, your back or your tummy or your thigh or your bum, to give a little lower bit to your breast to give a natural sling? So it might therefore mean more operations for you. In saying that, studies have shown that women who have a delayed reconstruction, so those who've been flat for a period of time and then have a reconstruction, have a higher satisfaction with their reconstruction than those who have one at the time. And if we break that down, I suppose it's because a woman who has been flat can be seen to be so happy that she's now got a breast that she didn't have, that she would be happy with what she's got, compared to someone who wakes up from surgery, having gone to sleep with two breasts and woken up with something that is a breast reconstruction but doesn't look anything like it used to.
Yeah.
Again, hard to unpick.
I found this really hard. I had chemo first, so I had the luxury of 5 months to make a decision about whether to have an implant. And part of my reasoning was vanity. And I felt guilty for feeling vain because I didn't want to wear prosthetic bras. And then I thought, what will my patients think if an oncoplastic surgeon doesn't have a reconstruction? But I knew I'm slim. And if I'd gone flat, I would need to have enough tummy skin to bring in to make an implant. And it's so complex to make that decision. But now, 5-6 years down the line, I wish I'd just gone flat in the beginning because I'm not that bothered about how I look. And it's like, you can't make a rational decision because you're dealing with the fact you have cancer. One thing I didn't realize though, and this shocked me, and I do implant surgery, the breast reconstruction is numb.
Yeah.
It has no real sensation. It is so odd. And I never told patients that.
No, absolutely. So, you know, there's a few really important things you said there. One is that in hindsight, you thought, I wish I'd gone flat. I hear people say that. Sometimes if a woman needs revisional surgery, meaning going back to do more surgery down the line, they say, you know what, I'm done now. I'm going to go flat. I think I can do it now. I feel braver. I feel stronger. I don't need it. I don't want it. I don't want other procedures. Until, and this will take generations, society allows women to make decisions about their body based on what they feel about their body, not what they think society wants their body to be. Even you said, an oncoplastic surgeon having a mastectomy. You know, what are the expectations? We make decisions based on many other factors than just fear. It's again, everything we're saying today is so complex. So we don't have the luxury of time in those decisions. We can only act at that moment and try and think ahead for our patients as to what might work for them based on studies, based on experience.
Yeah.
Knowing that they might change their mind down the line. It's really difficult.
It is. But what's really encouraging is there are more and more women who are proud to be flat, and there are lingerie for women who are flat, and even bras and sports bras for women who are uni boobers like me. So that we are getting out there and showing it is okay to live like this. You're not a freak. It can be completely normal and you can be happy.
100%. I think a key word that has come up in some of the questions is the word vanity. And I see this in clinic. Women are embarrassed to come back for a reduction on the other side to match up the breast that's been reconstructed. They're embarrassed to say that their capsule, the scar tissue around the implant has gotten tighter and it's making it look a funny shape. They're embarrassed to want a nipple. Don't be embarrassed. You did not choose to have cancer. You did not choose for someone to operate on you. Please be confident and never think that anyone is judging you for wanting to do something for yourself just with everything else going on. Not vanity.
Well said. It's so important. But now here's a question, and I never told my patients about it, and I don't think I know what the answer is. I've had two local recurrences that are easy to see in the skin. You get these little nodules, but how do you look for a recurrence behind an implant?
So we can look for a recurrence behind the implant, but when we remove a breast, and the body is fascinating, there are what we call tissue planes, literally like paper tissue planes, between certain areas. So under the breast, there is a specific plane, let's say the word plane, under the breast and on top of your pec muscle, which is under your breast tissue. So unless a tumour has been going into the muscle, there isn't any breast tissue there. So whilst it's not impossible, it is extremely unlikely you will get a recurrence behind an implant. If you had a cancer that was removed and it was going into the muscle, and we knew that beforehand, there may well be a recommendation that you don't have a reconstruction right now because you should probably have some radiotherapy to that chest wall because it had already gone through. And so if we had any concerns, for example, there were unexplained symptoms with an implant reconstruction, an MRI is a really good way of looking. But it's not common. I don't think people should be worried about that unless they are in tune and they feel something is not right. Please let's make someone listen to you.
Thank you. That is so helpful. Now, I wanted to save the worst for last in a way, complications. Not a lot of people get them, but some are actually really common and some I never talked about until I had them and realised how bad they were. And I wanted to start with pain after surgery. I was quite glib about saying, yes, there's a 20-30% chance you might get chronic pain. And Wendy, Selwyn, Debbie, Amy, Shelley all want to know more about it. And I guess it's, how long do you expect your breasts to be painful after surgery? And then we can come on to post-mastectomy pain syndrome later.
Pain after surgery generally would depend on the type of surgery you have. And most people would say that breast surgery, I haven't had that myself, is not actually very painful. It's the armpit surgery that can hurt the most because of nerves that travel across here that's, you know, give sensation to the inner arm. So that's the part that can be most painful. And I would expect that to last for a few weeks. Now, radiotherapy itself, which I say can frazzle the tissues, can in fact then cause increased pain and tenderness across the breast. And unfortunately, being the gift that keeps giving, so they say, it can continue for months or even years, where you may always have tenderness in your breast. It doesn't mean there's something wrong, but unfortunately, it can be a side effect of that. You already talked about numbness. So it's about altered sensation altogether, isn't it? It's a whole spectrum of, am I going to have any sensation, odd sensation, or too much sensation? So we need to tell people that things may not feel like they used to feel.
So we do a lot of cutting down around the nipple now to hide the scar of the lumpectomy, but that may change your nipple sensation.
Can do.
It may not be pleasurable to touch anymore because the nerves have been cut. And if you've had a mastectomy, the sensation will be gone. So you'll feel pressure, but you won't feel light touch.
Absolutely. Now, I think somebody had mentioned about nerve preservation with mastectomy.
Yes.
And in my experience, in doing a mastectomy, remember earlier I talked about there are specific tissue lines to go in. If we're doing that properly, then some sensation can be preserved or not altered specifically. But we have colleagues across the pond in America who are doing what we call nerve preservation mastectomy, who are specifically looking for these nerves, which can be as thin as this hair, to, you know, to try and preserve as much sensation as possible. And it's great that those procedures are happening and those conversations are happening. And that's something I'm going to go and train in as well. But it's not something that's going to happen across the world for a long time.
And it adds hours and hours to the operation, and you need plastic. It's a long time, isn't it?
It really does. And either they're preserving nerves or they're using grafts from elsewhere, which can cost £10,000 a pop.
Yeah.
That's a difficult one, isn't it? When I have conversations with patients, both cosmetic and my reconstruction patients, I ask, do you have much nipple sensation? Is it important to you? How do you feel about it? And some of them say, I don't like it at all anyway, or it's not been there for years. So it's nice to know as a baseline what happened. Not only for me, but also to get that person thinking about what's important to them as part of a conversation.
That's brilliant. But I want to now come on to post-mastectomy pain, because I used to tell patients, there's a small chance you might get it, and that was it. And then I had it. And I thought, oh my goodness, it's... And I don't want to scare anybody listening, because it doesn't happen a lot, but it was like this chronic burning electric shock pain that was just on the skin of my chest wall, and I didn't know how to help it. Now, there are treatments available, but can you just tell us a little bit more about it, Anushka?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, so glad people are talking about this, so that we know that it can be quite common, not only after mastectomy, but also after simple lumpectomy, people can have chronic pain. So much more common than we think. It's known to be common in about 20 to 30% of people having mastectomy. And it can start as soon as the first couple of weeks after having surgery, or it can start later down the line. And it's kind of what you described, Liz, that kind of tingling sensation, unpleasant tingling sensation, where you're kind of, oh, is there something going on in there? All the way to shooting sensations that make you jump and grab your chest and everyone looks at you and says, what's going on? And can be really difficult to treat because you can't just take paracetamol, ibuprofen, even morphine-based opioid medications are not going to work on nerve-related pain. So, you know, again, important to educate healthcare professionals as well as people about this. It sometimes needs referral to a pain clinic to have in local anesthetic injections to help deal with the root of the problem, because I call it live wires. When you have a nerve ending that's not working properly, you can't treat the ending. You've got to treat where it started from. And so all the way from hoping it gets a bit better, watching it, taking some kind of analgesia, taking nerve type medications, which fall into the category of antidepressants. You may have heard of amitriptyline, gabapentin, to people online. People don't like saying, I'm on an antidepressant. It's amazing.
No, I
don't want that. I'm not going on an antidepressant. No, but it's for pain. No, I'm not taking the antidepressant. And it can affect your function, of course. It can make you drowsy. You want to be a functioning person. All the way up to needing pain clinic. Acupuncture can be thought to help as well. So there are various ways that might need to happen, but it's so much more common than we appreciate.
And I think if surgeons could tell their patients it can happen and say, if it happens to you, let me know, because I know how to treat you.
That's it.
And it does get better in time rather than suffering in silence. The next thing I wanted to talk about, Louise Harris asked us about seromas. And she said, why do some mastectomies give you a seroma and some not? She had a huge one form immediately after surgery, whereas the one on her other side, done by a different surgeon, didn't get one. Are they normal? Do we need to worry?
Yeah, seromas are a pain, aren't they? And actually, when
first of all, should we just say, what is a seroma?
So essentially, a seroma is a collection of lymphatic fluid. When we operate on the breast, either doing a lumpectomy, a mastectomy, or in the armpit, those lymphatic channels, which you know take fluid and move it around the body, they're left bare open. And so the fluid just accumulates in a space. And we've looked at years of different techniques to try and reduce the amount of fluid that can collect. So I don't see it as a complication of an operation, but more a consequence of an operation.
It's like the body's filling the cavity with a bit of fluid and you hope that it'll just naturally absorb in time. But it's not always that way, is it?
Not always the way. So if we're lucky, the fluid will just reabsorb itself. But sometimes the amount can be as big as the breast, if not bigger than what was removed in the first place. And in those consequences, that's going to take a lot of time to reabsorb and might need a bit of help with a needle and syringe in clinic to have it drained off. There are various techniques that people use and should use as common practice to try and reduce the amount of fluid that can collect. And you may have had drains in with your surgery. They're not proven to reduce seroma formation. But what is proven is something called quilting, which is essentially tacking. So it's putting some stitches between the skin flap on your chest wall and the muscle underneath to close off the space in there. But it needs to be done very carefully and gently because it can cause pain if it's done too deep and difficult. So a lot of people may not be confident doing it. Or if you're very slim, it may not suit you because you can end up seeing puckering on the outside if the quilting is done too deep on the inside. So the person who did one operation on one side compared to the other, that may have just well been luck of the draw. Or in my experience, if someone has just finished chemotherapy treatment, I find that they do tend to produce more lymphatic fluid than those who haven't had chemotherapy treatment.
Yeah. So it's not a complication. It's not a bad thing if it happens to you. It doesn't mean your cancer is more likely to come back. It's just your body producing fluid to fill a gap, but it can be a real pain in the bum to live with.
Definitely. Definitely.
I've learned so much from you, Anushka. But I wanted to ask a bit of a controversial question, and it's something I've been asked, and it's quite tricky. If you don't like your breast surgeon, can you change?
Please do so. 100%. Okay, I encourage people, even when I'm seeing them, to have a second opinion if they want. You're at the most vulnerable time in your life. We know that patient complaints in lawsuit cases, the first time they will think about making a complaint is from the first time they've met that person. It doesn't matter how well I act later on. If that interaction doesn't work for you, you need to ask. Please feel confident. You're not going to upset anyone. Not everyone is everyone's cup of tea. This is your time to get it right for you. Okay? Absolutely.
It's so important. And what you may think is a good surgeon may be very different to someone else. You may want someone who's got a lovely bedside manner, or you want someone who's really direct and to the point. It's completely personal. Yes. And we want you to tell us that you don't like us, you'd rather see someone else, because we want you to have the best possible outcome.
Definitely.
I don't mind if it's not me.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't mind if it wasn't me, but it's really important to know if you want to change, because it'd be quite scary. Do you think people should see their GP, or should they tell the breast care nurse? Because that fear of Miss So-and-so is going to find out, and what will they say if they see me?
Yeah, I think, and I hope people feel connected to their breast nurses. Everyone is very busy, okay? If you don't feel you can call someone or speak to someone, or in fact, you might want a different breast nurse, write a letter, write an email. There are so many emotions involved at the time of a diagnosis, even afterwards. You've got to be comfortable and you're not going to upset anyone. Sometimes I've upset someone just by calling them in late to my clinic room because I've had a really difficult, long discussion with the person before. And 40 minutes waiting for your results, looking at a wall, is upsetting. So you might come in and hate me from the moment you've met me. And I can't apologize enough if that happens, but I can understand how immediately I've not got your back to you. And you want someone else. And it's gutting when that happens. But, you know, you have to ask for what you think is right for you.
Yeah, you're important. Thank you so much. I'm sorry we couldn't answer everybody's questions. But before I let you go, Anushka, I just wondered, do you have any top three tips for anyone waiting to have breast surgery, or any three questions they should make sure they ask their surgeon?
Ooh, so amazingly difficult, that one. I think you want to know that you've got time to make a decision. Okay, like, are you saying I need to make a decision now, or I need to think about these things, I've got time to make my decision? You want to know that you've been offered the options that are relevant to you according to your diagnosis, and that they've kept you focused on that. And you want to get as much information upfront before you go ahead as possible. because we know that satisfaction down the line is really impacted by your upfront information. There is so much information out there now, isn't there? When I was in med school or training, I had to go to a library and get a book. My patients come to me with their treatment plans. They say to me, I'm going to have this, this, and this, and this. And then I'll listen to it because why not? You're extremely empowered and educated people. But can I use my skill now to help navigate you through what's right?
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to chat to you today. Thank you so much.
You too. Thanks for having me.
That was oncoplastic breast surgeon Dr. Anushka Chowdhury. And I have to say a huge thank you to Anushka for being so patient with me and for answering all of your questions. I think the takeaway for me is that it all comes down to communication. Don't be frightened to ask your surgeon to slow down and go through all of your options. And if you don't get on with your surgeon, it really is okay if you want to change to someone different. And now it's time for the wonderful Donna Ashworth, our podcast poet, to read us the poem of the week from her best-selling book, Wild Hope. Over to Donna.
Shadows. We have all awoken, sharply startled in the night, suddenly fearful of the brooding shadow in the corner of our room. Hearts beating in our ears, we scramble for the light, only to be greeted by a pile of clothes on a chair. Life is like that too. Shine light into the dark corners of your mind. Take a good look at the scary parts you are afraid to enter into. They are quite different once that light is on them. They cannot hold any power over you in the burning glare of your shine. Light them up, my friends. Light up those shadows and scare them away for good.
That was Donna Ashworth reading Shadows from her book Wild Hope. And I've been in that place Donna was talking about where you're scared of everything, like many of you listening. And a bit like this podcast, I hope we can help you know that there's always light around the corner and you don't need to be scared. Now, if you want to read more of Donna's poems or find out about today's guest, Dr. Anushka Chowdhury, or send me a question to answer on the show, you'll find all the details in the show notes. And if you love the show, tell someone about it or leave us a rating or review wherever you get your podcasts. Next week, we're going to be covering everything you need to know about chemotherapy with a fantastic oncology nurse, Rachel Clifton. I used to work with her and she's just amazing. We're going to tell you how to prepare, what you need to buy, and how to cope with all the side effects. So make sure you tune in.
Facially, you look different. Your hair might not be there, but just have the confidence to get out and do, because the more you get out and do, sometimes the better you feel about things.
I'm Dr. Liz O'Riordan. Thank you for listening and I'll see you then. So Now I've Got Breast Cancer is produced by Birdline Media.